ladies and gentlemen, time for the weather geeks of the free world to unite. This is Weather Brains, episode number 367. This is for Monday, the 4th of February. It's time now to talk weather with our big brains on the show. I'm James Spann, and we have a big group in here, including Kevin Selly, who is the crank of the show. And what? Here we go.
We interrupt this program for a CBS Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
Now, look, you can't ask me where I got this, okay? This is top secret. It came to me. Don't try and figure it out. But you know, James, you know how you get a successful television show, right, on TV, and then everybody tries to copy it, including you know, I mean, networks will copy themselves, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, you've seen the show Shark Tank?
Yes.
Well, somebody released to me after our extensive discussion last week with Michelle Lee about the Facebook incident. I have been told, and we'll take a listen, I have been told that there is a new program coming out on your network, James.
Wow.
This fall. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. Let's roll it.
Coming this fall to ABC, Facebook Shark Tank.
Who are the sharks? They're self-made millionaire and billionaire investors who are entrepreneurs themselves.
James Spann, who cleverly engineered a temporary takedown of his Facebook account last year in order to make it appear that Mark Zuckerberg was charging $100 just to send him an email. Brian Peters, who made billions franchising a certain top secret fried chicken recipe. And Kevin Selly, who stands on the street corners of downtown Fort Worth with a cardboard sign that reads, "Will forecast for food." Facebook Shark Tank, Mondays on ABC.
There you go.
That is breaking news. The biggest question, how did you get your voice to do that? Can you do that?
That was given to me. I don't know anything about it. It's just apparently an early fall preview. So
you're just saying you obtained a copy of that and you have nothing to do with it.
People send me things. I don't question the source. I just thought that was important breaking news for our listeners.
Well, thank you. And only on this show do you get breaking news like that. I was on Reed Timmer's show last week.
Where were you?
Yes, he does a new podcast, and I was on his show. It was last week. It was 2 weeks ago. And mm-hmm. Reed doesn't have breaking news stories like that on his show.
Right. Or promos like that, I'm sure.
Right. I mean, so, yeah. That was a good show. We had a really good time. I have not been a guest in so long. It was like shocking. I mean, we went on for like 90 minutes. And instead of me asking questions and pressing buttons and all this, that they were doing it, and I was just
a guest.
We need
to do that on this show one day. We're going to interview on this show one day.
Well, I've always said, we need to do a JB night. JB needs to be a guest on this show and let him go back and tell stories of the super outbreak and of working at the United States Weather Bureau in the 50s and the 60s. Yep. We need to do that sometime this year. But
see, the key to that will be actually getting him on the show.
Yeah, JB sent a note and said that, and JB's wife Judy is not in good health now. She's got a series of issues, and he's having to do the grocery shopping and take care of her, and they've got car problems, and it's just it's a tough time. But
if Reed needs any big pipes promos, let me know.
Hey Reed, I got a big pipes guy that you need to talk to in Dallas.
That's right.
Speaking of Dallas, what's the weather like out there? Calm.
It's my wife is just terribly upset. She it's been so mild, just a short winter so far, and she likes a little bit of cold weather here and there, and it's been pretty warm. So that's it. We're done, I guess, with winter.
We had a cold core upper low come through here, and man, it snowed. This was a couple of weeks ago. I don't think we talked about it on the show, but man, I mean, it came down for a brief time. It was fun. Well, that was when we had the big snowball fight on the University of Alabama campus in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, nice.
On the quad, the kids go out there and have the big snowball fights. And, of course, with a cold core, it snows so heavily, and they had like a couple of inches, and then 3 hours later it's gone. It's melted. So, splash and dash on the snow.
That's exciting.
Speaking of breaking news, now, you see, we have our investigative reporter. working hard right now. I know a lot of you are not watching. You're listening. Most of you listen. But for those of you watching, we have Brian Peters of our investigative unit talking with Bill Proenza to find out.
Oh, maybe we need a promo for that.
We need a Big Pipes promo for that. But yeah. Bill is out at the Weather Service, you know, and there's some interesting stories to tell. And so Brian is gathering all this information, and as soon as he's off the phone, he'll share that. In fact, it looks like he's just getting off the phone right now.
He just got off.
And he's got to put his head.
More breaking news.
He's got to put his. Yes, right. We're going to blow out this breaking news jingle here.
Everybody start waving at him so he'll pick. He needs to.
No, he's frantically making notes, and Bill probably threatened him with his life.
There
that if you go on
comes.
This show and say anything I just told you, we'll have your legs broken.
What's the scoop, Brian?
Yeah, but I bet you Bill knows a couple of guys named Moose and Rocco. So Brian, what did Bill say?
He said he would love to come on the Weather Brain show.
Ooh. At some point in the future.
Problem with this Google Plus.
At some point in the future, yes. Because there is a lot of wrangling going on at the moment. I do have his cell phone number and email address, so he promised to stay in touch, and I promised to stay in touch. There's some kind of interesting things that seem to be going on. First of all, Bill Proenza, the director of the National Weather Service Southern Region, who has just apparently been reprimanded and then fired. I think that's interesting to be reprimanded and then fired.
And Brian, for those that don't know, what was the big stink? What did he say that got him in trouble?
Well, apparently, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but apparently he did an interview with the Washington Post, I believe it is.
I think you're right.
I didn't make a note of the newspaper, but he made some quotes in the Washington Post that apparently, and I've known Bill Proenza for my entire weather career. Bill and I actually followed Bill from Tampa to Atlanta, or Tampa to Tallahassee to Atlanta in my early careers. And then he went to Washington, or from Atlanta, he went to Washington. I went to Atlanta, and then I went to Fort Worth. So we kind of diverged at that point. But Bill, one of the real great strengths of Bill as a regional director, and there's four major continental U.S. regions. There's also Alaska and Pacific, but there's four in the continental U.S., which is also interesting because the National Weather Service doesn't go by the 10 standard federal regions. They have four, so they save money right there. But Bill has always been a tremendous proponent of field offices. I know Bill was one of the architects of trying to create the warning and coordination meteorologist position, to be able to work to improve warnings and the coordination thereof of warnings.
Really?
And public education. Yeah, I mean, he was a big proponent of the warning preparedness meteorologist and the community preparedness meteorologist and eventually the warning coordination meteorologist. But he was sharing some things with me about things that are going on. And one of the interesting things is, of course, as you read in some of the posts that have been generated over this whole boondoggle, another boondoggle that hits the National Weather Service, of course, is that they're accusing him of some sort of irregularities when it comes to the transferring of government funds.
It says $528,000.
Bill happened to share with me that it's interesting.
No,
that
wait, don't get him in trouble.
Yeah.
No. He said it's just interesting that he's being accused of this, except that it was all done when he was out of town.
No, brother.
Now,
the other thing, Brian, they're mentioning here, apparently he had some type of plan to shut down radars on in the southern region on sunny days. Does that have anything to do with it?
Yes. And do you know why he's shutting down radars to try to save money?
He didn't have the budget to pay the bills, right? I mean,
Yes, Bill shared with me that the southern region, which covers New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, across Arkansas, Tennessee, and points southward down to Florida, that the what is really the single most weather active region of the four in the continental United States, he said he typically runs about 18 vacancies across all of those forecast offices.
Wow.
And in just recent, okay, in recent, just the last few weeks, as we started the new year, 2013, he is running with a total of 60 vacancies.
Wow.
Now, you know, I mean, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist or a genius to understand that if you have 60 vacancies, you can't handle the mission you're being given. And then on top of all that, of course, the government seems to be running on continuing resolutions, except that NOAA and the people above the Weather Service are sucking most of that money out for oceans. So anyway, Bill said he simply could not talk with us now about, you know, what's going on because of all the ramifications of what's going on behind the scenes right now and all of the accusations and whatever. So,
well, you know what? I find this. Go ahead, James.
I'm just going to say, you know, I'm reading about Bill. He's 68 years old. He's worked for the National Weather Service for 50 years. And I don't ever hear any bad things about Bill except from these, you know, government people.
You know, well, and that's because he rocks the boat, James.
And it's also meant, you know, and Jeff, I promise we're going to get to you. We have a guest here.
I know. I apologize, Jeff. Yeah,
but you know,
I'm listening.
You know, Bill was actually the director of the Hurricane Center for a brief while, and then he was booted out of that.
And why was he booted out? Because he started talking about what could happen with the loss of satellite data for the Hurricane Center. And now he's talking about the ramifications of all these vacancies and the loss of funds to the local offices and the warning process. Excuse me.
It seems like if you just go out in public and criticize budget problems and budget cuts you got to make, then you're going to be, you know, shut up or transferred to Siberia or fired. Is that the deal?
That certainly looks the way it is. And of course, where there's smoke, there's often fire.
So you better be careful, Brian, because they may cancel your retirement or something.
I hope they can't do that, but, you know, I'll figure out a way. I'll come live at James Spann's house.
Yeah.
I'll steal Wi-Fi at his place.
But before we get in trouble and this show goes down the tubes, we all get fired and get Bill in even more trouble. Let's bring in Bill Murray, who's going to bring in our guest.
Yeah, hello, James. Yes, tonight's guest, Weather Brain, who's been waiting patiently. James is the president and founder of Zoom Radar. He's a graduate of Cornell and a former television meteorologist, also a professor of meteorology at the University of Miami. Tonight, we welcome Jeff Berardelli to the show. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. You know, I will say that I'm not a former meteorologist. Unless you know something I don't know, I still work for CBS. So, is there something are you here to give me some type of notification? Is there?
We heard you were having coffee with Bill Proenza.
That's all right, Jeff. When I was introduced, I was at a dinner for the Shelby County Chamber of Commerce. I was introduced as a former meteorologist myself. So yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
So now you're a former.
You're going to go out on our own and start our own weather service. Then
there you go. So are you a former television meteorologist, or are you still doing that, Jim?
No, I'm still a TV meteorologist. I work for CBS in Miami.
Come on,
somebody could have that many jobs.
He's got that look, man. He's got the TV look. He's got the big mark. He's got the hair, and he's got the big pipes, and he's got that good look. You know, I mean, it's just he's on television. Come on,
why? That's nice. Thank you, James.
No, I mean that. You got the TV look. You know.
Well, I haven't shaved in like.
Watch out, Jeff. We build you up so we can knock you down even further.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting for that. But no, I appreciate your hospitality, guys. Thank you.
So have you got any dirt from the Bill Proenza era at the National Hurricane Center that you can share with us?
It was very short. I mean, it was very short.
If you blinked, you missed it. That's right.
It was very short. I think the bottom line is if you say anything that could potentially reveal any information that is not supposed to be revealed, then it's very possible that that could happen to you.
So if Laura Fergione shows up at your house, Brian Peters, you can kiss that retirement goodbye.
I'll be watching for her. I'll have to figure out who she is there. I know who she is. So.
If she shows up at the TV station, I wouldn't let her in, James.
No.
Just stay away from that. So Jeff, you know, you've done a lot of cool stuff, and obviously you're doing a lot of stuff all at the same time. So, you know, tell us how you got into weather.
I wanted to be a meteorologist since I'm 3 years old. Ever since I can remember, I think you hear a lot of stories like this from people who are meteorologists, and I've just always known. I got my first weather radio from my mom as a gift when I was four. I always wanted to be a meteorologist on Channel 2 in New York City because I was born and raised in New York City. And when I was 27, I got that job at WCBS in New York City. I did it for about 5 years, but I was doing the morning show, and it was driving me up the wall waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, as anybody who is a television meteorologist has probably had to endure that position working the morning shift. And I asked for a transfer down to Florida. I worked in Tampa before I moved to New York City when I was in my early and mid 20s. So Florida is not foreign to me whatsoever. And I've been a meteorologist at CBS in Miami now for about 6 years.
Well, and so how did Zoom radar come into being, Jeff? How did that appear?
It was back in 2007. I first moved from New York to Miami, and I had a lot of responsibility in New York City, not quite as much in Miami. So I just kind of was looking for a way to contribute to our website. I thought that that was maybe the one place that I can really kind of get my hands dirty. And so I walked into my boss's office and I said, I have this unbelievable idea. We should have a radar on our website, just like we use on the air, because we get these pop-up thunderstorms, in Florida, rains on one side of the street, doesn't on the other. So why not have a radar that you can, that people at home can manually, control, zoom in, zoom out, hyper local type of app, which of course at the time, I didn't even know it was an app. There was no such thing as an app. She thought it was a great idea, and I went to work trying to figure out how we could get this. I thought maybe WSI would offer it or Weather Central, but at that point, no one had invented interactive radar yet. So I went and hired a developer and built interactive radar, and that's how I got my start back in 2007.
So it's a cross-platform deal, I understand, Jeff. Some of the features that you offer in it, and how can people take advantage of it on their sites and apps and things like that?
Well, it was built originally. It was built in Flash, and I have to be honest with you. I didn't know much about the internet, but the one thing that I did know back then, because I don't have much technological savvy, or at least I didn't, was that I didn't want it to be built off something that wasn't native to the browser. And my developer convinced me that everybody had Flash, and so it was okay to build it. Yeah. Well, that was in 2007. Yeah. And it was, Adobe Flash has always been a plugin, but it was pretty standard back during that time. Of course, I regret about a year and a half, 2 years ago when iPads became so popular. That's the problem with being a small company like me, is that all of a sudden, and a lot of the weather vendors had to do this, they had to switch from Flash over to HTML5. So recently we went and did basically the same thing. All this infrastructure we built on Flash, we redid onto a JavaScript HTML5 map, which then can be embedded within apps and can be seen by iPad and iPhone. What a pain it is that there are so many platforms out there and that the standards aren't the same. It costs tremendous amounts of money, as I'm sure all of you are keenly aware of, the issues with being a software developer in this day and age.
Well, and that also speaks to the idea that technology is changing so quickly. So, how are you able to keep up with it on, a small company level like you are, Jeff?
Well, one thing I have not done is I haven't developed any apps on phones. What I did was I developed a cross-platform map that would be compatible with all devices. And what I'm enabling my clients to do is to take that map and embed it inside of their apps. So there are certain TV stations, and I would imagine that ABC 3340 is one of those TV stations that has their own weather app. But a lot of TV stations, a lot of radio stations, a lot of newspapers don't have weather apps, but they do have news apps. And so the way I integrate is I give them one of my cross-platform apps, and then they can seamlessly just add it to their Droid app or their Windows mobile app or their mobile website. So instead of because there's no way that I have the capital to build apps for every single, you know, one of the platforms out there.
So how many organizations are you currently doing things with right now, roughly, if you can share that, Jeff?
I mean, I have, I'd say right at the moment I'm on about 100 media sites. I'm just in the process of integrating on a much bigger client, which will add somewhere in the range of a couple more hundred websites to my client base. A lot of them are like medium size or smaller type media websites, but you know, for a small company, it's been good. I won't lie. I mean, look, you can't possibly compete with the WSIs of the world. But we've held our own. I've been in business now for 6 years.
And you can be bought by them, so that's a good thing. And
I definitely can be. Bring that again.
There's the whole end game right there.
There you go. That's it.
So James, you know, I called Jeff up, you know, and I think I know our Alabama WX site pretty well. And so Jeff says, "Oh, Bill, we're on your Alabama WX site." And I'm like, "Well, you must have hacked it then, because I didn't know you were on there." "Oh, yeah, I'm on your radar page." I'm like, "No, you're not." And I look over there and I'm like, "There's the Zoom radar app." I'm like, "Doggone it, when did James Fan put that on there?" So
yeah, anyway. You just never know what you find when you poke around blogs.
You give anybody a login and they can just do anything they want. And I was like, "Well, there you are, Jeff. That's pretty cool." So Jeff, any cool new plans for the near future? Anything you're working on that you can share with us?
Well, I've been working on a couple of different things. You know, last year we integrated, and this is kind of an interesting story, and I think you guys know this, but this is the 1 year anniversary of Andy Gabrielson, you know, passing away. Now, what was interesting about that is that about 3 weeks before he passed away, he got in touch with me and said, "Hey, I like your Zoom radar map. I want to put it on my site." And that started a conversation with myself and Corey Hartman and him. We all got together on a group discussion and discussed integrating severe studio storm chasers onto the Zoom radar map. So if you check the Zoom radar map out, you'll see that it's there. And the eeriest part of the whole thing was his last tweet was related to, "Hey, check out the Zoom radar map. It's a great map." And I had only known him for about 3 weeks or so, but he was really the impetus for getting myself and Corey Hartman kind of hooked up and working together on storm chasing. So we're basically just getting ready for the new season right now, which obviously is going to begin pretty soon.
Well, I'm sure you're always looking for good talent or folks that can partner with you, Jeff. So anything you want to throw out there to the weather community, the vast WeatherBrains audience?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are working on a few things, and I'm just not saying them because obviously in this world, things happen so quickly. Some of these things are proprietary, you know, plans, and I don't want to give away too much. But we are bringing on a much bigger client right now, so we're in the process of expanding. But the one thing I'd like to say is, you know, the only way that I can expand as a company is if I kind of open the door to partners. And so I'd like to find some people. There's so many talented people in our weather community and our not only meteorologists, but also they have some type of technical skills. Maybe they have development skills, GIS skills, and forecasting skills. And what I'd like to do, and I'm probably going to have to do pretty soon, is just because we're going to be expanding and taking on more work, is kind of open the door to people partnering up with me. And, you know, we're not the kind of company we can necessarily hire people outright, but certainly if someone can demonstrate value, we definitely see fit to starting to give out some equity in the company. We've been around for 6 years. We're a solid company. And the only way we can really grow and expand is if we start to open up to the weather community and bring in some good talent. I know there's a lot of people out there. especially recent graduates who have gotten out of school and cannot get traditional jobs, but are interested in doing cool, neat, new things. And I kind of want to extend that invitation to the weather community to get in touch with me at zoomradar.com. And let's start a conversation and see if we can bring some people in and start doing some really cool, innovative things.
Well, one thing we wanted to have you on, the real main reason that we thought of you, Jeff, is because last week we had Johnny Parker on the show. He and his mom, his family came into the studio in Birmingham at James's television station and talked about their experiences with the big tornado on April 27th and about Johnny's, adventures in meteorology. And he's an amazing young man. And we learned after the show, and Patty was so upset. She was like, I forgot to think Jeff on the air for this internship that he gave me or gave to Johnny, and he's really loving it, and she wanted to make sure that that got out over the air that you had done that for him.
And that's really nice of her. I'd say that I have to thank Johnny for all the work he does. He is really dedicated, so talented, really smart. And I'm glad we have him. He blogs every day on our website, on zoomradar.com. And, he just needs outlets because he loves the weather. And I remember when I was, his age and younger, how excited and passionate I was and just dying for someone to give me an opportunity to just work in weather. And so I'm glad that he has a chance to do it. And we're happy to have him on board. That's for sure.
Yeah. We're excited every week. Some sort of request comes and he forwards it around to all of us. And lots of folks are interested in having him because he's an amazing young man. And we sure enjoyed having him on the show. I know Kevin wants to ask some questions. I'll ask one more thing and then I'll kind of get out of the way. Jeff, thank you for being here tonight, but talk about forecasting in South Florida for us for a minute. What are some of the challenges and some of your favorite parts of that?
Some of the challenges are from October through about May, nothing at all happens.
Nothing?
Wow. I mean, especially, if there's an El Nino, we can actually have a fairly active winter down here. 97, 98 was a huge winter in the Tampa Bay area. I was forecasting, I was a meteorologist on air there at Bay News 9. But to be honest with you, if it's not an El Nino, nothing really happens. Fronts that pass here drop the temperatures a couple of degrees. A couple of years ago, we had a couple of really big cold air, outbreaks when we had that really negative Arctic oscillation. But this year could not be quieter. And it's not abnormal for it to be rain-free for months at a time here, where we may see a shower or two here or there. I would say that the challenge is that you go from, extraordinarily quiet times to hurricane season where, you go from 0 to 60 immediately, where one minute, you're dealing with no weather at all. And then the next minute, life-threatening weather when a hurricane is kind of threatening your area. So there's very little in between. I was a meteorologist in New York City for a while, obviously, and I'm from there. Forecasting snowstorms is one of those things where, you can get into it as a meteorologist and get excited about it, but you're not really worried about people's lives being in jeopardy quite the same as it is in a hurricane. In a hurricane, around here it's sunny and 80 every day until there's a hurricane, and then all of a sudden everyone's life is, in jeopardy. So that's, I think, the challenge of being a meteorologist in South Florida.
Well, that's very cool. Kevin, I know you got some questions, and I'll turn the floor over to you.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. I'm so pleased for your success. I remember you were here some time ago. You were just starting out, and I'm looking at your website here, and you've got a giant list of media partners. So first of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, we had to try to survive that big economic downturn. And so what we started to do at that time is we started to offer advertising on our map, and we started to give the map away for free. We're not doing that anymore, but for a while, to survive, all of the big weather companies like Weather Central and WSI basically had to give their app, their interactive app, away for free and then just put their own advertising on it.
Right. What do you see as far as clientele going forward? My suspicion and my observation is that a lot of the stuff that's going on in the digital space is happening at the mid and higher levels of companies as opposed to the station level. What would you say to that?
That is one of our biggest challenges because, at first when the internet was, in its infancy, even in late, around the time I developed Zoom Radar, You could go to individual TV stations and get them as clients. Nowadays, you run into the, you know, you have to talk to our group. You have to talk to the heads of our corporate group. And right. and it makes it more difficult for companies like mine, because these corporate groups are used to dealing with the WSIs and Weather Centrals of the world. And, you know, a lot less interested in dealing with, you know, mom and pop companies like myself. So that is a bigger challenge. Our move is probably going to have to be a little bit away from television media and a little bit more towards you know, the other media out there, which is newspaper and radio, because they have obviously a lot less presence in weather.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate, because I think, you know, James is a perfect example. People like Brad Panovich, there's so much stuff and innovation and hunger for new things going on at the station level, at the operational level. And I find it frustrating that at the corporate level, these people have not necessarily been in our foxhole and don't necessarily know what's going on. I find that it is a really big challenge, but good for you for plowing through it. Shifting gears a little bit, though, what are your comments on... It seems so easy now for just about anybody to get into some sort of weather space. You know, the guys that did Storm Pulse, for example, a couple of years ago, they got to a financial model, and now it's a private company. But they were on the show, and they both admitted that neither of them had any meteorology background. But right. Somewhere a year or two ago, I saw, I don't know if it was from them or where I saw it, but it was a promotional picture where their product was up on one of the large screen TVs in the Situation Room in the White House, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And then the guys that did Dark Sky, that was just an engineering challenge for them. They're not into meteorology.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to talk here in the next week or two about a new one that came out, Storm Pins. And I don't know that there's a meteorological foundation to that. We're going to learn more about that company, I think, in a week or two. But I would love your comment on that.
You know, I think, and I have to be honest, in the technology realm, I think it's a lot more important to have technology experience to be, you know, intimate with coding and understand platforms. And that was my biggest challenge. I mean, when I developed Zoom Radar, and I didn't do it personally, like I said, I hired developers. I didn't even know what to type into Google to find people to make this for me. Right. I didn't even know the word developer. So this was a tremendous challenge for me. It kept me up many sleepless nights because I didn't even understand what I was building. I only knew that I had this great concept, and I didn't even know if it could be done. So what I would say to that is, you know, it's almost more important to have a background in technology than in weather. But where I think that meteorologists can really succeed here is by adding that personal touch. And so where I find myself moving towards in my company, and this is something I can't really necessarily talk about on the show, but is I'm going to try to do things that would involve more of a, I think at this point, technology can only take you so far. There's a point at which people really still want to hear their local weather person. And that's kind of the direction that we're going to be probably moving to, into me being involved with things that I can be more in control of. Not to say that technology won't be a part of it, but there's a synergy there where meteorologists can use their skills and also do it hand in hand with technology rather than it just being a technology, if that makes any sense.
It does. And based on the other part of our conversations, I agree with you 100%, 1000% that's the way. If nothing else, that's the way we, as what we do, will survive, have a chance to survive, because the automation continues to grow and grow and grow and take over more and more. But the huge, difficult challenge is explaining that concept to people higher up in some of these companies, especially when I get the sense that there are a number of, I won't mention any specifically, but some of these companies are sort of, it seems the plan now is almost to be dumping digital product out there for nothing in order to at least have a presence in the market or wrap up certain partners in the market. And that makes it even further difficult for somebody who even may have a better idea to work their way up.
It's tough. You know, no one wants to spend money on the internet. I'm sure you guys have seen that. Very few organizations are really making good money on the internet. And so you struggle to really, you know, get people to pay you for hard work. It's not like buying gasoline at the gas station. The internet has still not really found itself yet in terms of revenue models. It's getting there, but I really just don't think it's there yet, because everyone's fighting for nickels and dimes, and a lot of these big companies still have yet to see the tangibility, if you will, if that's even a word, of the internet.
Yeah, no, that's true. And there was a really interesting article, I think it was the Wall Street Journal some months ago, about the guy running the Weather Channel, and he echoed that. He said, look, nobody has quite yet figured out the digital revenue model, but eventually somebody will. And one of the things that I think we observe the Weather Channel doing is laying a pretty big foundation, which I think everybody should be doing and is not being done in a lot of cases, but laying a new foundation for digital distribution. And then eventually somebody will figure out that model and they will be in that space ready to go.
You have to be so patient. And that's the hardest thing is things move so quickly on the internet. Every time you turn around, you have to reinvest money. You know, it's hard to make any money, but if you can be patient enough and essentially get enough real estate or enough of a following on the internet, once the revenue model is a little more clear, or, you know, once you can figure out something, once you have that, you're right. I think you're in a good position to capitalize. The question is how long do you have to wait, and how much money do you have to invest time and time again to get to that point?
Yeah, and on a small end, it's very difficult, because a friend of mine and I did some development in the digital space and the iOS space a couple of years ago, and we kind of felt like we were ahead of the game, but very quickly the larger, well-funded guys come in and undercut, and then the whole paradigm changes, and it's, I mean, I'm just venting at this point, but it's a really tough row to hoe.
Hey, let me ask you guys this. Why aren't the old traditional newspapers hiring meteorologists to do weather products? Because look, it's easy money. It is easy to sell. It is something that it's in high demand. And yet I see large market newspapers, you know, using AP copy and quotes from these weather service products. Why aren't they doing live wall-to-wall tornado coverage in tornado markets? You know, why aren't they doing?
I completely agree, James.
Why are they not doing that?
Well, go ahead, Jeff. I can speak from a specific example, but go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I'm just going to say that when I first invented Zoom Radar, my thought was, well, wait a second, the playing field is now equal. The newspapers can have the same kind of stuff that TV stations can have. Newspapers can hire meteorologists. It is taking them so long to come around to this. I'm starting to feel in my, you know, endeavors in this realm that they're realizing finally that something that nobody ever turned to the newspaper for, which was weather, because it was always a day old, now they can compete on the same playing field as TV. So James, you know, you're exactly right. It's exactly what I've been wondering. It's exactly what I've been trying to convince these clients of. And I think you're going to see that. But the bottom line is what I said before, is no one wants to spend any money at all on the internet.
Well, no, and not only do they not want to, they're afraid to, because there's a certain investment, if nothing else, in the human alone, that costs a fair amount of money, and there's no immediate return on the investment. And the other part is a mentality shift that hasn't taken place yet. I had a long chat, and this is some years ago now, with several people from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And I still am struck to this day by going into that building to visit with them, because, and they've since moved, but it's still downtown. It's this old marble and dark wood building on the inside. It's just this old, old, rich, historical, different media model environment in there. And one of the things that they just could not, the bridge they could not cross, and I understand this, I to a point agree with it, there was just no way that they could see any logic in entering a market or a space where you have at least three television stations that have been beating each other's brains out for the last 40 years on a weather brand. And there's just no sense to them in trying to compete in that space and against that history. The other thing is there's, you know, there's a cultural shift that hasn't gone on there. I had one of those people, and God bless them, tell me, they said, at one point they said, yeah, you know, this sounds pretty good. This is pretty interesting. You need to go and develop that and come back in 5 years and let us know how it's going. And I, at that point, I knew I was beaten because I thought, well, 5 years from now, we're going to be on the moon or doing something with weather. It's just is not, you know, things move much more quickly than that. But that was a specific example.
I think these guys are a bunch of yellow-bellied chickens.
That's right.
They're and look, that's right. I'm telling you, here's one of these days, some newspaper, old traditional newspaper, they're going to have the guts to go hire a big name in weather and steal them away from a television station.
You know what?
What?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let's say that they went and knocked on Jerry Tracy's door and said, you know what? Come on, we're going to take on James in Birmingham. Yeah, who has the guts to do that?
Well, if I were running a newspaper, they're in trouble. They're selling their buildings like here in this market, the big daily. They're only printing 3 days a week now, and they're selling the building, and it's just dwindling. The weather franchise makes a lot of money. I can show them how to make a lot of money. To this day, it makes a lot of money, but you got to spit. You got to hire that one person in Dallas, Fort Worth. You know, let's say this were, you know, 1980, you go hire Troy Dungan or Harold Taft or somebody, and I'm telling you, the door is open, and somebody somewhere is going to have the guts to do that, and they start streaming tornado coverage during, you know, tornado outbreaks if they're in a tornado market, or winter storm coverage if they're in the Northeast or wherever in the Midwest. And one of these days, this is going to happen, and I'm telling you, it works.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, these guys are in trouble. Like today, right? So we had a big story in our state today where, you know, this hostage situation that's been going on for a week. There was an autistic 5-year-old child, you know, being held hostage by this lunatic in some bunker in South Alabama. I beat all the daily newspapers with it, and I'm a weather guy on social media. And, you know, we went on the air, and I'm just telling you, I can compete with them too. I mean, there is no, these boundaries are just going away. But newspapers need to get in the weather business, and you cannot get in the weather business, you know, quoting some National Weather Service guy you talked to on the phone 2 hours ago, or quoting some AP article, you know, with some bonehead on some forums. You need a professional meteorologist that they come in there.
I resemble that remark. I was one of those people they quoted.
You know what'll happen, which is really an interesting thing. And I've been looking back. Seth Godin, who I talk about a lot and quote on the Digital Meteorologist blog, has a new book out. And I've been going back over some of his work. And he wrote a book some years ago called Tribes. It's a fascinating book. I recommend it to everybody. But in this newspaper model that James was talking about, one of the fascinating things that would happen is if you just went and hired one guy who was the meteorologist, what would happen very quickly is this little community of people who would help and assist him would spring up. It would be made of people who listen to this program. There would be weather geeks coming out of the woodwork who just want to be associated and want to share data and want to work with you on that. And so the investment is you don't have to go and hire a giant staff. You need to hire one or two people, but you could be very easily working around the clock and getting very, very good data and doing digital streaming type distribution as opposed to the 5, 6, and 10 television model, or when we just happen to go on because, you know, the Weather Service has pulled the trigger on a warning. But yeah, I think that's a very good example that I think James needs to start a consultancy and go and tell them what to do.
I'm not nice. Kevin is the consultant guy. He's got the nice clothes. He comes in, he speaks like NPR. Hello, this is Kevin. I'm a consultant.
And this is what you need to do.
And this is what you need to do. My arms flailing around here, and you know, I'm not a consultant guy, but come on, Jeff. I mean, Miami, somebody down there hires you. All right, they come in there and they pay you, you know, $200,000 a year. and you are going to be their guy. I guarantee you within a few years, they will turn that into a big profit center. So somebody down there needs to hire you. What's the big daily in Miami? What is it?
The Miami Herald. And Sun Sentinel, the Miami Herald.
Yeah, so yep. Whoever those guys are, this is your guy. You hire him and watch what happens in 2 years. You'll be rolling in dough.
Well, James, would you like to be my agent?
I need to be.
Listen, I need you to call these newspapers because I agree with you completely, and I think that's where things are going, although there's no money to necessarily hire meteorologists locally, but I think it has to go in that direction because that's where that's their opportunity. There's only one opportunity for them left. I mean, they compete on all the other – the one place they don't compete at all is in weather. So that is an opportunity. I think they're beginning to see that. They just need to get there. And it's going to be baby steps, I think.
Yeah. It's too big a hill for them to climb. There's too much competition in the market. And even if – and I'm playing the other devil's advocate now because I agree with everything you guys have said, but the minute a local newspaper, the Miami Herald or whoever, started doing that, you would see a massive promotional effort on the part of the television stations to combat against that. And I mean a massive effort. And I've seen examples of this, not with a newspaper, but, we've had Rich Foote from Foote's Forecast on this program. And he operates up and down the East Coast, but his primary area is in the Baltimore area. And in his model, which I won't go into now, he had, in the early days, he had quite a bit of pushback from the local television stations. And fortunately for him, one of the things that worked to his advantage was he's working with kids, with students, high school students and college students. And the television stations, several of them instantly went after him when he started to get some traction and said, oh, you're using kids. What's going on? And there was a backlash against the television stations because you can't go and attack kids. I mean, he's kind of bulletproof in that way. But it is a big, big hill to climb. And it's a very, very it's one of the last protection areas that the television stations can use. And I think that the fight against that would just be an epic, epic battle.
I mean, but
it would be fun. It would be a fun battle.
It would be fun. I'm with you. I'm just telling you what I think would happen from a business standpoint. And I think it's too, you know, they're just not getting track. You know, you listen to Jarvis and he gave up on newspapers some years ago, Jeff Jarvis on This Week in Google, but he threw up his hands. But what he had hoped was that newspapers especially would become local media companies. And there are a few small individual examples, little pockets of examples where that does work around the country. But on a larger scale, it just hasn't worked. It hasn't panned out where you can cut off into neighborhoods or cut off into regions of your market and say, hey, why don't you work in this area and we'll support you from, you know, the infrastructure standpoint or the billing standpoint or whatever as the big parent or the newspaper. And those relationships have just not, as fun as they might be, have not evolved.
Hey, listen, guys, we got to take a break here. We're going to stop and we're going to do Professor Peters and Weather Brains 101. We'll come back and do a weather roundup. We'll have the picks of the week. We do have an email inbox segment tonight, even though Nate is not on the show, by the magic of radio. It's all coming up as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
In this episode, we're going to look at the third new product supplied by dual polarization radars. KDP, or differential phase shift, is a very hard product to explain. Now, basically, the differential phase shift is defined as the phase difference between the two pulses at a given range along the propagation path. The specific differential phase is the range derivative of the differential phase, or how differential phase changes with respect to the range from the radar. Values greater than zero indicate horizontally oriented hydrometeors, while values less than zero indicate spherically oriented hydrometeors. Values near zero indicate nearly spherical hydrometeors. So, what values are you looking for in this product? Well, KDP can range from minus 2 to plus 10. KDP is most useful in rain and heavy rain events and will improve precipitation estimates in dual polarization radars. As KDP increases, rain rate increases. KDP over 1 is very heavy rain, though like in ZDR, extreme values may be indicative of water-coated small hail. Pure hail and snow have near zero KDP. KDP will not compute for non-weather returns as it will be far too noisy, but this is a drawback as it may mistakenly not compute for legitimate weather echoes, and that can have an impact on precipitation estimations. The primary use for the KDP product is for heavy rain detection. It will also help in better differentiation of standard rain processes from others, such as tropical rainfall. Now, next week, I'm going to take a look at an interesting product derived from the other radar products that incorporate some fuzzy math. If you have a weather question, drop an email to question@weatherbrains.com.
Thanks to Professor Peters. Now, Bill, you want to do a This Week in Weather History live or not?
Sure. Yeah, I've got one. I was waiting to see if you would ask.
Roll it.
So, all right, well, we'll go back to February the 5th, and that would be in 2008. Do you remember what happened on that day, James Payne?
2008. The Super Tuesday outbreak?
Very good, yes. Yep. The largest February outbreak on record, 87 tornadoes from Louisiana to Ohio, 57 people were killed, 5 EF4 tornadoes, one on the ground in Arkansas for 123 miles, which was their longest track since 1951. 32 people died in Tennessee during the outbreak, and there were 2 EF4 tornadoes, if you remember, in Alabama early on the morning of the 6th that killed 5 people. And I thought there were some interesting notes from one of the NWA meetings that I went to a couple of years ago where they talked about it. I think it was Greg Carbon or someone, talking about this event, because it was caused by this unseasonably strong early season trough in a really, rich, warm sector with lots of Gulf moisture well in advance. It was outlooked as early as day 6 on the 31st. By the day 3, they were talking about widespread severe weather, including damaging winds and tornadoes. By day 2, the probabilities were maxed out. Moderate risk was employed, and the term long-lived supercell. I mentioned that this morning to the Alabama Power folks. That's one of the last things you want to see in an SPC discussion is the idea of long-lived supercells with tornadoes. But, even 12 to 18 hours out, forecaster confidence was still very, uncertain, really, because there was a chance that the cap might hold. And, would the forcing just turn into a big squall line and cause fewer tornadoes? There were lots of low clouds in the warm sector early in the morning, and that meant that instability would be limited. But forecast soundings, indicated by, that morning that they might fail to break the cap. So, but on the 18Z sounding that Little Rock issued, special release, there was more cape there than the models had forecast. The cap was weaker, and they began to realize this thing was actually going to go. Jackson forecasted 73 for a high. The observed temperature that day was 79. And by 21Z, the forecast sounding was uncapped with that much higher cap or much higher cape. And, the 13Z decision with the SPC was to go to a high risk. And, obviously the situation played out. The medium range forecast, had very good confidence, but some of the higher res data, doesn't always necessarily mean that you have increased confidence in your forecast. So, it was a very interesting situation. It would explode, of course, during the afternoon and turn into that deadly event. And that's one, of course, that occurred during This Week in Weather History. And follow my weather history tweets on Twitter. I am WXHistorian at Twitter.com.
And I guess we should mention it was a year ago today that Andy Gabrielson died. It was the 4th of February. It was a Saturday, as I recall, and it was a car accident in northeast Oklahoma. Apparently a drunk driver was going the wrong way, head-on collision, and many of us recall Andy as just one of the world-class storm chaser guys. And I never knew Andy, but you kind of feel like you did. But that happened 1 year ago. So just something to remember. And we still pray for him and his family. All right, guys. I tell you what, since we've got this National Weather Roundup we normally do with JB, he's not here. Things are quiet. And again, this is the 4th of February 2013. The nation's been kind of a deep freeze up in the upper Midwest. Those people in Minnesota, it's been brutal for the last couple of weeks. It's been bad up there. They've done some
Yeah. Minus 39. It embarrassed Minnesota. It just won't go away.
I mean, I've seen some Twitter traffic from these people in, like, you know, Wisconsin and Michigan saying this is getting really, really old and stale. I mean, it's bad. So, but they're going to get a little bit of relief as the nation warms up, and we got another low coming out of the southwest, and a lot more questions and answers. But at the time we're doing this show, things are quiet. So I thought we'd go right to the email inbox from the man who's not even here. He's here anyway. My standards are not that low. Let's do it. Let's talk it up and do it right here.
Seems with content. We love content. I wasn't able to dig through it last week. Getting a chance to dig through it this week, though, and some really good stuff in here. Bunch of fun stuff. Let's get off the right off the top here. First off, a link to an article about mitten weather. Richard Meister sent us this, all the lake effect snow coming off the lakes over the state of Michigan, which if you hold up your hand, looks kind of like your hand if you look at the state of Michigan. Ricky Matthews sent us a note on Sandy Relief Beer. Yes, a number of Long Island breweries are getting together to formulate a beer that will be sold and money ostensibly given to Sandy Relief causes. The name of the beer, Surge Protector. Gotta love that. Appreciate the links over the last couple of weeks. So one from George Chisenhall about a Vienna sausage commercial. That one is sent straight to JB. Wallace Stuckey sent us a link to a test pattern. We just had the test pattern show a couple of weeks ago. Jeff Wilcox also sent us a test pattern, a couple of horn sounds. You know, we love playing with those here on Weather Brains. Got a couple of links from Marcus Toops. Appreciate those. Had a question. This could be a potential Weather Brains 101, but if you want to just shoot us a note if you've seen these, Thomas Ray asking about model comparisons. Is there a website or a graphic or a table somewhere that summarizes the ongoing performance of the various global models, the GFS, the European, and so on and so forth. If you got one of those, I want to say that I've seen that out there, but shoot us a note. Let us know what you've seen. A couple of guest suggestions. We appreciate these. Ken Hagland sent us a note about Judy Crockett from Brigham Young doing research on the wave structure of the atmosphere. We're actually going to have Dr. Crockett on a future Weather Brains. I believe that's already been scheduled. Brian Valco sent us a note suggesting we bring on Mike Masco. He's responsible for one of the very cool kids weather apps out there on the iPhone, and we'll maybe try and get a hold of him for a future episode as well. A couple of listener survey responses. Love getting these. We want to know what you think of the program. Good, bad, or ugly. And if you've been listening, you know we've had a couple of bad ones and a couple of ugly ones, too. But these are all generally pretty good. Robert from St. Petersburg, Florida. Tim in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And Jimmy, we appreciate all three of you sending those on. If you want to tell us how we're doing, go to weatherbrains.com. Find the chick with the headphones. She's looked like she's enjoying the program a little too much, if you ask me. But click on her face. It'll take you to a form. You can fill us out. Let us know how you think we're doing. Wanted to pass along kudos from Michael in Lexington, South Carolina. Thought last week's program with Johnny and Michelle, Johnny Parker, Michelle Lee, was fantastic, and I could not agree more. And I wanted to thank us for having them on. And finally, our last story, the email inbox. Mary from Kansas wants to remind us that tomorrow, this is being recorded on Monday night, February the 4th, which means tomorrow, Tuesday, February the 5th, is National Weather Person's Appreciation Day. Sent us a couple of great graphics, and one of them, I love it, talks about thanking all of the folks who gather around the Weather Brains digital mahogany table. Just a great visual, even if it has no root in reality whatsoever. That's our email box for this week. Hopefully I'll be back live with you next week, but until then, hope you have a great week and enjoy the weather.
Yeah, somebody sent me a note about that National Weather Person's Day. It says it commemorates the birth of John Jeffries. Didn't we work for him in radio, Kevin, a long time ago? Mm-hmm. Hey, this is John Jeffries on Cool 107. He was a Boston physician and one of America's first weather observers. He began taking daily weather observations in Boston in 1774. He took the first balloon weather observation over London in 1784. He carried a thermometer, barometer, hygrometer to 9,000 feet. And this is a day tomorrow to recognize the men and women
who collectively provide Americans with the best weather, water, and climate forecast and morning services of any nation. So, yeah.
Except for Bill Prolenza.
So if you'd like to send a monetary contribution, just make it out to weather. You ever listen to Adam Curry and John Dvorak do that show, No Agenda? You know, they ask for money and people send them money. I mean, it's just, you know.
They said if they stop sending the money, like
they call them producers and executive producers. And if you send in so much money, you become a knight. Yep. And they read these things off every week, and they're getting, you know, like $500 and $700 checks from people. I mean, so if you want to send us,
if you want to send us some money, send
it to jamespanretirementfund.com.
Yeah. Brian Peters.
Right, go ahead, Kevin. Yeah.
Money at weatherbrains.com.
It will get where you want it to go.
I got two that Nate jumped over. One is from Gara Gillentine. She was listening during the program, the live stream, when we had Michelle Lee on last week. And she's got a point about that and also a weather point or a Twitter point, really. She said she was shaken and a bit freaked out, actually, that Facebook has so much spying power. She knew that they seemed quite unethical a couple of years ago, and that's when she removed her photo and art images and closed her account. Her daughter, who was an iPhoneographer, soon followed. But she also, have you seen any of these things, James? Have you done any of these things where you can value your Twitter account? This thing, I'm going to see if I can find out what it was that she used to do it. But she sent a screenshot of it, and you put in the username, and it tells you how much your Twitter account is worth. And to tell you how accurate, wait to hear the range. The @span Twitter account is worth between $54,475 and 69 cents, and $90,792 and 81 cents.
So the highest bidder.
Yeah. So somewhere in there,
$324.
Oh, and did you hear? We did Brian's. Michelle found Brian's value to email him. Did you hear that last week, James? Did you get to the program?
I heard of that. Yes.
Yeah, Brian's was $1, whereas yours was $100. Somebody who's not friends with me, try mine. I got to see what mine is worth. And then a quick note that came over the broadcast meteorologist group on Facebook was posted by Miles Muzio, but I saw this coming a ways down the road, but I'm really surprised that they got to it this quickly. It appears, it says, as February dawns, a new team is taking shape within the AMS that will help determine the qualifications, evaluation, and general texture of what is to become a new type of certification, the Digital Seal Development Subcommittee. How about that?
I'm in charge of it, Kevin.
Oh, you're kidding. Yes.
No, I'm in charge of it. And,
why haven't we heard of this yet?
Because I didn't know that he was talking about it. This is,
this didn't just start.
Well, I mean, you know, I just got pulled onto the deal, and Betsy Kling is on the committee, and I can't remember who else, but we'll have two other additional folks that'll join us, and I think we have to have something, you know, in place and running by June for the council, and they'll probably make an announcement, in the fall at the NWA meeting in Charleston.
So what's this? Give us the details.
This is not AMS.
Well, I mean, at this point we get to decide. Yeah, it's not AMS. It's NWA.
Because you said AMS, and then Bill jumped in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should have corrected that. I wasn't paying attention when I heard that. But
no, it's my bad.
But yeah, I knew what he meant. And so yeah, Miles is in charge of it. He's of course the broadcast seal chair, and this position will actually eventually have a chair. And the idea is that, you know, there's a lot of folks, and James, you and I see this all the time. You know, anybody can, you know, set up a social media account or a blog and start forecasting the weather. And there needs to be some differentiation. And so we're going to have some say in how that, that certification.
I think that's good because every 15-year-old kid has a weather center now. And they have a Facebook page, and they have these Twitter accounts. And you don't know if it's a 15-year-old kid or if it's a, 46-year-old degreed meteorologist who's been doing this for 25 years. You don't know. And I'm seeing people get weather information from some really funky sources during severe weather and winter storms and everything else. So I'm all for it. I go for it, man. It's
So what's the criteria going
to
be?
Well, we get to decide, Kevin. That's the point. So I'll be reaching out, and you're one of the people on my list, Kevin, to, you know, sit down and start having some discussions about how this
Kevin's
should,
not a member of the
look.
NWA because right. he's boycotting.
Well, see, now he can cough up his $45 and, you know.
He's over there at that B-Lo compound making so much money. He's probably got 87 of those black turtleneck shirts, you know, per day he can wear. So cough up the $45 and join the NWA.
Well, I think it's really interesting. I kind of figured that this was going to come down the pike at some point in time, and I just didn't think it would be this soon. So that's going to be really interesting.
Hey,
we got to
do picks of the week. Let's start with the Fog Bank and Skydiver.
Hello, Weather Brains listeners. This is Dave Phillips, Skydiver on Twitter. You can find my picks of the week at skydiver.blogspot.com. First up, Chuck Cravat sent a picture he spotted on television of an unfortunate driver on 485 in North Carolina over near Charlotte during the rain-snow event in January. I think he forgot which side was supposed to be up. My second pick comes from Earth Science Picture of the Day, with photos of an upper tangent arc sequence, a cloud phenomenon similar to sundogs. Earth Picture Today comes through again with my third pick of Grauple in Montreal. The January 30th storm is featured as a GOES 13 image. That's my fourth pick. And finally, spaceweather.com has a neat photo of ice halos taken in Bulgaria late last month. Thanks for listening. Skydiver out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for the picks of the week. I will start. And I know that I'm not supposed to be showing this on camera. Can you guys see those dots on that map?
No,
I'm holding up an iPad.
The hangout is really pixelated tonight.
Well, you got crummy bandwidth.
Not very good.
Hang on. Let me put my camera up. All right. See those little dots in there moving? Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, toward the
equator? I don't know why I find this so fascinating, but I actually do. This is an iPad app, and this is my pick of the week. And by the way, this is where we go around the horn and just ask everybody share something weather-related. It can be an app or anything else. This is a little app that is called Windscape. And it's simple. It's no big deal. There's no real science behind it, but it's got these little colored balls that go with the low-level flow. And for some reason, my simple brain, I love this.
Is this the one they did on Mac
is.
Break Weekly? Yes, it costs like $20 or something, doesn't it?
$1 or something. It was like
how much
a buck,
is it?
99 cents. So, Alex Lindsay or somebody, one of those guys on Mac Break Weekly picked that, Andy Anopko, and I'm thinking, all right. Yes,
so you're stealing
exactly.
Picks from another
you got
program,
that right. You now know my mode of operation here. So it's called Windscape, and it's very hypnotic. And I don't know why. It is a very simple app, but I just like this. It's peaceful. I'll put it that way. All right, and Jeff, we'll pick you last to give you time to think of a pick of the week here, because we have done extensive research all week long on this, as you can tell.
James listened to 47
That's
hours
right.
of podcast to come up with that.
I had to listen to a lot of podcasts to steal that one, all right? So let's go to Brian Peters, the internationally beloved meteorologist, for his pick of the week.
Before I give my pick, I have to tell about how enthralled James Spann was with the very first iPhone he ever saw.
You've told this. Just tell it again. I love this story.
He was like Satan coming in here.
I was not. James said, do you have an iPhone?
Yeah, see, that's what happens. That's what happens when you talk ugly about me. You get kicked off the show.
Like Proenza. Yeah. Boom.
The federal government just kicked Brian off the show. All right, I'm telling you, it got up to the internet bandwidth guru and the feds cut him off. Boy,
that's funny.
He just went away. We'll come back. All right, Cab, what's your pick of the week?
Mine is actually a YouTube video that my dad sent me. It is it is the largest ever captured on video iceberg calving, and it's 7 or 8 minutes long, but it's pretty interesting and it's really neat to watch. And the whole thing that calved off of this one iceberg, they say it's about the size of the island of Manhattan. It's not all at one big, you know, whoosh, but it takes a period of time, and it's interesting to watch. I will warn you, and James, you can get ready with the buzzer. There is a little kind of a hint of a global warming message at the end of it. Thank you very much.
Brian, where'd you go, man?
I got this thing that said the hangout had ended due to an error.
The feds, yeah. Man.
We see that every week.
It's the feds, baby. The feds, they know where you are after talking about Bill Proenza, man. You are on the list, baby.
I guess so.
Happy address. Yeah.
All right, give us your pick before they cut you off again.
Okay, my pick is Groundhog Day history.
They used to eat them.
A lot of people have been asking me, well, how did Groundhog's Day ever get started? So I was curious about it, and so I found a Groundhog Day history, and that'll be my pick.
You know,
I think it's fascinating.
Go ahead, Brian.
The Manatees picked the winner of the Super Bowl for the sixth straight year.
Manatees?
Yeah, I bet you were sweating there toward the end of the game, huh?
Yeah, but I was pulling for the Manatees the whole time.
That was a good game.
All right. I'm going to talk with John Olshue, this guy that used to work here. He used to eat. He would go out and shoot these things, and he probably used to eat those things.
Groundhog?
Kidding.
Well, he would go out and shoot wild hogs in West Alabama, and he would eat them, like, on site. I mean,
Hey, James, they're not as big as wild hogs. They're a lot smaller.
But groundhogs are a lot smaller.
They're more like squirrels.
He goes out and shoots whatever, and he eats it, Ron. Like, he shoots squirrels and eats those things. I mean, so we'll see if we can get...
Funny.
If you've ever had groundhog for dinner or, snacks... Groundhog fingers, whatever. Please.
Surely that's illegal to eat a groundhog.
All right.
It's not illegal.
Speaking of the Super Bowl, I got to give my son a plug. I'm doing the right thing. The second that the lights went out on the game, Matthew looked over at me and he said, are there storms there?
There you go.
No, it's called energy.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Kevin, I got this new audio. Do we need to play this?
Oh, it's a new segment. Go ahead and, Brian will like this.
Okay.
Brian Peters.
I will.
Inside the Weather Service.
keep that for Brian's reporting on Bill Proenza.
This is good. All right, Jeff, I'm so sorry we had to drag you through this muck tonight, but it's time for your pick of the week. You can pick Zoom Radar, anything you want to. Go for it.
No, I don't want to be too self-serving. The one thing I want to note is, and I don't know if anybody has been paying that close attention to the difference between the European this week and the GFS for the end of the week storm. The European has this big, essentially what turns into almost a blizzard in eastern New England, and the GFS has light rain in the southeast.
Yeah.
And it's only 108 hours or 96 hours out. Now, the GFS seems to lose its... I mean, obviously, there's a phase that the European sees that the GFS doesn't see. So if there's any pick for me, it's just this tremendous... We're only 4 days out here, and this tremendous difference
GFS... Look, you make the call right now. You tell our listeners, is it going to be a historic nor'easter or nothing?
Nah. It's not going to happen. The European... I think it's going to... so many times nowadays, the models are all so good that they just end up converging on a solution, and that's what's going to happen here. It's going to be probably a moderate event for eastern New England, but it will turn into more than GFS shows. If you guys noticed that the vorticity on the GFS, one minute it's there, the next minute it's gone. There's something weird that's been going on for the past 2 years with the 500 millibar vorticity infection.
And it's almost it's missing some data or something. It's like some of the data doesn't get in some of these runs. I don't know.
That was one of Bill's ideas. You could only run it 3 hours a day, and that way, you don't have to spend the electricity to run the supercomputer 3 hours.
Right. Well,
all right, but
I'm not going to comment on that.
Hey, Bill Murray, you got 2 minutes for a pick, and I got to go do television.
Yeah, here we go. Next week, Nate's in charge of the show. He's going to be talking about the PING program. Carrie Capelli will join us as the guest panelist. Dr. Marshall Shepard, the president of the AMS, on the 18th. Jay Prater on the 25th. Dave Carroll from Virginia Tech on March 4th. Glenn Schwartz on the 11th. Chuck Doswell on the 18th. Greg Nordstrom on the 25th. George Winterling on April 1st. Dan McCarthy on the 8th. Julie Crockett on the 15th. And John Hamill on the 22nd. That's the guest coming up on Weather Brains.
Boy, wow. These are big names here. We need to double your pay or something. Wow, that's awesome.
And James, what is John Jeffries known for besides National Weatherman's Day?
I don't know.
He was a loyalist doctor, so he was loyal to the British.
Wow. Interesting. All right. Well, did you do?
I thought he sang with the Who.
did you
he was backing up Beyonce?
Did you get your pick in, Bill, or just do the promo here.
Well, I sent Brian a pic of, I think they were bringing in some homeless folks in Europe to be on television to do the weather to raise awareness. And I thought that was an interesting thing that I saw last week.
What? They were bringing in homeless people to do the weather?
Yeah.
Man. Well, that's on that note, I'm closing this show. Weather Brains is the weekly show all about weather. We invite you to watch. If you want to watch it live, we are on the air every Monday night at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern at live.bigbrainsmedia.com. But most people listen, and that's great. We know that you do that. If you want to send us an email, it's email@weatherbrains.com. All of our Facebook accounts and the Twitter accounts, they're up on the website. And so we just love to hear from you. iTunes comments, we love those as well. So on behalf of the entire Weather Brains crew, I'm James Spann. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. God bless.